Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday. I'm looking out the window right now, and it is just gorgeous out. Crisp and cool, but beautiful, and the sky's blue, and it's a great day, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you. I have a great show today. Lisa Levart is going to be joining me. She is an award-winning photographer and author, and I'll tell you more about her book, Goddess on Earth, in a little while when I invite her on. And, of course, I have a recipe to share with you, and I want to go over some upcoming events that I want to share with you. Yesterday, I was out at Stony Brook University at an offshore wind farm conference, and it was just, you know, educating the public and people at the conference about the offshore wind farms that are being planned off the coast of Long Island, and it's very exciting. I mean, it's, you know, a few years out, but the potential for generating a lot of electricity and energy that way is really great, and because it's going to be far offshore, you know, it's not going to affect the migration of the birds the same way it would when it's on land. And it just was very promising. You know, of course, you know, as LIPO was talking about, you know, all the studies that they're going to do to make sure that it's a good project, I kept thinking of Shoreham and the nuclear power plant that we're all still paying for as taxpayers. And I was, it was a little hard to listen to the LIPO guy. But other than that, everybody else was really quite informative, and Citizens Campaign for the Environment was there, and Sierra Club was there, and it was just, it was a great event. And then in the evening, I went to the Women Chefs and Restaurateur event that happened at the International Culinary Center, and, you know, that was a really wonderful event as well. You know, there was a lot of question as to whether women chefs should actually even get together on their own and support it. You know, why aren't we, you know, just a part of regular chefs, and meaning men chefs, and why do we have to separate out? And it's just, you know, it's all about the support, and, you know, the glass ceiling is really very present in the restaurant business. I mean, certainly people have broken through, but, you know, it's not easy. You know, when you see in a magazine, you know, the 20 best chefs or best new chefs, you know, you're lucky if there's one woman in there. And we all know there's so many women chefs out there that are just not being recognized. So it was nice to go to that event and participate in that. And it's so appropriate having my guest today, Lisa Levart, who really focuses on the feminine energy in her work. And as I said, I'll tell you more about that later. But it was just a really nice group of women, and it was you know, nice to just be a part of that. There's some exciting things coming up in and around the New York area. Well, tonight, of course, we have a slow food meeting, and our normal venue, the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, is not available. So we will be doing it at my co-chair's home in Northport. So if you are interested in coming, you can either send me an email at bhavani@iegreen or phone me for directions. And my number is 516-238-3616, and I would be happy to give you directions where the meeting is going to be. Also tonight is a wonderful fundraiser for an organization that's very close to my heart, Grassroots Environmental Education Center, and their fundraiser is at the Wainwright House in Rye, New York. There might still be some space available if you wanted to go to that. You can find out more information on my website at iegreen.com. November 16th is a Beekeeping for the Future workshop, and it's a workshop with Megan Durney and Bill Day. They are both the beekeepers up at the Pfeiffer Center, which is a wonderful educational center for biodynamic farming in Chestnut Ridge, New York. And you can Google them for more information. It's the pfeiffercenter.org, Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, center.org, and find out about their beekeeping workshop. The following week, I'm starting to gear up for my annual Thanksgiving feast. You know, it's where I pull together people from the community to work with other friends and children to create a Thanksgiving feast for those in our community that are less fortunate. And we do this out in Rufus King Park on the 26th. So the whole weekend before, we are, you know, scrubbing potatoes in my bathtub and cooking turkeys and the whole thing. Most of it's vegetarian except for the turkeys. But anyway, if you'd like to participate, sign up is also on my website. Food Not Bombs, another wonderful nonprofit organization close to my heart, is also creating a huge Thanksgiving feast for their site in Hempstead on Sunday, November 24th. And they're going to be cooking, Saturday night, the 23rd at John's house, who runs the organization. You can find out information on their Facebook page, Food Not Bombs. December 4th through the 6th is a Young Farmers Conference at Stone Barns. I had an intern that attended this before and just said it was just an unbelievable, wonderful networking opportunity. So if you are a young wannabe farmer out there or already a farmer, this is a wonderful coming together with other young farmers at Stone Barns, which is the wonderful agricultural teaching center on the old Rockefeller estate up in Pecatino Hills, which is actually, you know, right by the Tappan Zee Bridge in Westchester. December 5th, there is a GMO debate at Hofstra University. I'm very excited to be on the panel there with some other scholars who are going to be debating GMOs. There's two of us on the pro-GMO side and two of us on the anti-GMO side. I bet you can guess which side I'm on. And I'm really excited to be a part of that debate. If you are in the area, please come down. It's from 4:30 to 6. And you can register for it on the Hofstra University website. Also on December 5th is the Small Planet Funds Gala. And this is a wonderful, also a wonderful nonprofit organization. They're going to be honoring the Rainforest Action Network. And that's at a private residence in the city. So if you want more information about that, go to the Small Planet Funds website, and you can buy tickets to that event. I've gone in the past, and it's really a wonderful event. So lots of things are going on also that you can participate in. You know, there is, you know, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, has just about eliminated trans fat in this new ruling that happened last week, and that's really great news. Kraft is talking about taking their artificial coloring off of their macaroni and cheese, but due to a huge petition that went around. So it's really wonderful when I encourage you all to sign petitions. When I see that the petitions actually have worked, it's really quite encouraging. And Cargill is even aiming to label their pink slime, if you can believe it. And that came from the uproar and all the petitions that people signed recently. So on my website, you know, there's always an opportunity for you to take action, to sign petitions, to really get involved. There's a petition up there right now that I really want to encourage you to sign, actually a couple of them, but one about country of origin labeling. This is something that we fought really hard to get, and, you know, I was so thrilled, you know, when I found that the California vegetables, the frozen California blend vegetables coming from at Whole Foods actually all came from China. Well, you know, I was very quick to stop buying those organic California blend vegetables. So labeling is really important no matter what store you're going to. You want to know where your food's coming from. You know, if you can trust organic in this country, can you also trust organic coming from Chile or coming from China? You know, that's everyone's choice. I'm not really going to go there, but the bottom line is we want to know and we have the right to know. And of course, I was very disappointed that the right to know labeling law in Washington did not pass. I know they still have like a lot of, I think 400,000 absentee ballots to still count up, but I think you know, the millions and millions of dollars that the Grocer Manufacturers Association and all these private corporations put in at the last minute really helped defeat that bill. unfortunately. So we got to just keep pushing away, and eventually we will get the right to know whether our foods contain GMOs. But meanwhile, we do not want to lose what we have gained, which is the right to know the country of origin. So please sign that petition and pass it on to your friends. The recipe I want to share with you now is a wonderful, quick go-to recipe. As a matter of fact, I made it this morning for our slow food meeting tonight, because we usually do our meetings as a potluck. And I'm off to an appointment after our radio show, so I wanted to make some food and get it out of the way. So this five-bean chili is really great. These are the ingredients. You need 1 can of organic pinto beans, 2 cans of organic red kidney beans, 1 can of organic black beans, 1 can of garbanzo beans, and 1 can of cannellini beans. And, of course, you can use what you have at home. You don't have to go crazy if you don't have enough of one, you have more of the other. Or even if you want to use only one kind of bean, that's really okay. You do want to use organic beans, and if you can use Eden brand, where they actually cook them with kombu, the seaweed, which helps the digestion of the beans, that's really a plus. Then you need a small can of tomato paste, 2 organic onions chopped, 2 organic red peppers chopped, 1 carrot chopped, 5 cloves of garlic minced, 1 can of organic fire roasted tomatoes, 2 teaspoons salt, 1 teaspoon chili powder, 3 teaspoons cumin, 2 cups fresh spinach chopped, 2 tablespoons fresh chopped cilantro, 1 cup marinara sauce, and some olive oil for sauteing. And so you're going to start by sauteing the onions in the oil for 5 minutes, then add the carrots, the red peppers, and garlic. And like all my recipes, when you are the chef, you are the boss. And so my recipes are really guidelines, and you can feel free to adjust them according to what you have in your house. As many of you probably remember, I shared with you a recipe of making a chili sauce because I had all these jalapeno peppers. So in today's five-bean chili, I also put one of my little batches of the fire-roasted peppers that I had made in the chili sauce. And so I added that as well, so it's going to be quite spicy. So anyway, you can saute the onions and the carrots and the peppers and the garlic. Then you can add the spinach. After 5 minutes, you'll add all the rest of the ingredients and let that simmer for 30 minutes. And I serve it with some organic brown rice or brown rice pasta or quinoa, whatever grain you like. Actually, polenta is also really nice. You can serve it with polenta. And it's a wonderful, quick go-to dish. So I hope you get a chance to make it. As always, give me some feedback. You can leave comments for me on my website at ieatgreen.com. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest today. Lisa Lavart is an award-winning photographer and frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, where her blogs explore the intersection between art, the divine feminine, and women's empowerment and current issues. Her book, Goddess on Earth, Portraits of the Divine Feminine, won the Gold Nautilus Book Award in 2012. Goddess on Earth is also a traveling multimedia installation which has been seen in a variety of venues across America, including art galleries, community centers, malls, women's conferences, spirituality centers, and more. And Lisa's photographs have appeared in numerous publications, New York Magazine, Oprah Magazine, Time Magazine, New York Times, Washington Post, and she's had exhibitions worldwide, and it's just such a pleasure to have her on. And you might be wondering why I'm having a photographer on. What does that have to do with food and the environment and all the topics that I'm always talking about? And it's because the goddesses she picks, so many of them, are out there doing just that, changing the world, involved in food and agriculture and environmental issues. So anyway, without further ado, Lisa, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great. I'm so glad. I didn't mention that actually last week I got to be a goddess and
indeed
participate in a photography session with you, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. You know, I have never done that before, so it was really fun. And later on in the show, we'll talk about the goddess that I picked. We'll save that. But for now,
okay,
can you tell us what is Goddess on Earth for you?
Well, basically, I am an artist, and this has been my passion. I'm both a commercial photographer, but this is my art and my art passion. And my vision, which I had 12 years ago, is that images of women from all walks of life embodying ancient sacred myths could be a source of empowerment for women today, and that we needed more of these images. Women needed to see them. I'm a very visual person, so that's how, you know, I approach the world. And I felt I needed more of that, and I wanted to see it. So it's taken many forms, as you were talking about. It's the book. It's multimedia installations. But always my intention is to show that beauty comes from within and that the divine feminine is in the face of each one of us. So you are always a goddess. Not just
right.
When we did the photograph.
Uh-huh. And that's why, you know, I mentioned last night I went to this Women Chefs and Restaurateur conference or seminar. And, you know, it's just really nice sometimes to connect with other women, because when you're out in the work world, so often you're not with other women.
I was listening to you, and I did a quick search on the internet. We were talking about the glass ceiling with chefs,
mm-hmm.
and with visual artists. I went to did women artists in museums, and on
mm-hmm.
the National Museum of Women in the Arts, they have a list of facts on their website. It said 51% of visual artists today are women, yet only 5%. Are currently in display in museums. Are made
I know.
By women.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. It's amazing. And so our inner dialogues aren't being seen. Our inner, you know, empowerment issues, all that is not out there. As much as we think it is, it's not.
I know. In the Museum of Modern Art, you know, same thing. I mean, as you said, all museums. But,
all museums.
You know,
in the U.S., 5% is made by women.
Right, and more than 50% of visual artists are women.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's true, you know, when you think of who's doing most of the cooking at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mostly the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And our favorite recipes are passed down from generation to generation through your grandmother and your aunts and your mothers,
mm-hmm.
much more so than your fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as nurturers, you know, it comes naturally to a woman to nurture and to feed and to take care of
mm-hmm.
those around them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's just not recognized when you have a woman in the kitchen. You know, they were talking about that last night, about respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's usually not present, you know. I mean, respect didn't even come into the dialogue for most of these women when you're in a restaurant. It just doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're not valued as much.
Right.
The value
right.
is not there. Yeah.
Right. You know, I know at the Natural Gourmet Institute, I'd say 90% of the students there are women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's not the women that you're seeing out there that are doing the majority of the cooking.
Right.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah. So we're still fighting that battle. It's still
yes,
out there for equality and for valuing women's places in the world.
Uh-huh.
Well, one of the, we were talking about the goddess. In my book, I've divided into three stages of women's lives, a maiden, a mother, crone aspect. And the mothering aspect, I wanted to jump in about food and the goddess. The mothering aspect of the goddess is about ripening, about recreation of life, about, you know, plants and animals. It's about balance. It's about loving and receiving love. And all these are, that's about food, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and plants. And in ancient cultures, goddesses were worshipped for their for making the corn grow and for feeding the people, and these were all very important aspects that we've kind of tampered down when we don't celebrate that.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're describing the goddess I picked. The goddess I picked was Annapurna. Mm-hmm. And Annapurna in Sanskrit in India is known as the goddess of food, goddess of the kitchen, and goddess of harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those encompass feeding. And, you know, there's a lot of the mythology around feeding people in India because so many people are starving. And there was, you know, a story of Shiva where, you know, there wasn't enough food in India, and we went to Parvati, and the aspect of Parvati that was feeding everyone was Annapurna, and Lord Shiva begged Annapurna to come and feed the people, and she not only fed the people with endless amounts of food, but she blessed the food, and that changes the food from not just being rice, which might not seem so nutritious, but into, you know, a food that is embellished with love and health and actually enlightenment, you know, just, you know, with spirituality and health. And, you know, that's her essence, and her essence is just feeding people. And so whenever you see depictions in of food or in many Indian kitchens, you'll see a picture of Annapurna as the goddess of food.
And also celebrating, like Annapurna, these myths were about, you know, illustrate, when we don't celebrate it, it illustrates the disconnect we have with food. You know, these goddesses talk about it coming out of the earth. It's all earth-based. It's an earth-based spirituality. And if we don't celebrate that, then what is it? It's just from packages from the supermarket. It's what you're talking about. Where is it coming from? And it's embodied with the love of growing and nurturing from the earth.
And that's something that I connect with so much because in today's world, so few, I mean, I talk about mothers cooking, but the truth is so many mothers aren't cooking today.
Mm.
So many mothers are, because of our equality,
mm-hmm.
our mothers, you know, are working outside of the home,
mm-hmm.
yet they're still expected to do all the stuff when they get home, and they don't have the time
mm-hmm.
or the energy very often when they get home, and so they go to something that's quick. They either bring food in or they, you know, use a frozen product or a canned product and, you know, forget the love. There's not even, you know, there's definitely not love in the laboratory kitchen where they're making that food,
mm-hmm.
but there's also not the nutritional value because they're using food that's, a lot of the food's void of nutrition today. I mean,
right.
you know, I'm sure you've seen studies, you know, like an apple today does not have the same nutrition
right.
value that an apple, you know, 100 years ago had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of it is through the genetic manipulations that we do, but some of it is also just, you know, the soil when it gets depleted.
Right, haven't we, yeah, I was just going to say that, yeah.
You know, if you're not replenishing the soil, it gets depleted of the nutrients, and then it's reflected in the food. And, you know, if you're buying organic and you're buying local and you're buying from people who you know are replenishing the earth,
mm-hmm.
then you know those vegetables are going to be much more nutritious than something you're buying that was picked weeks ago and traveled hundreds and hundreds or thousands of miles
mm-hmm.
by land or air
mm-hmm.
or boat. And, you know, it's just a whole different thing. And so
It's the disconnect. It's the disconnect.
Right.
We don't know where
disconnect.
It's from. Yeah, and how it got there.
Right. And so when I talk to people about cooking, even if you don't have a lot of time, there's so many things you can cook delicious, like the chili I just said, although that is canned beans.
I love that recipe with the and that you put spinach in there. That was new to me.
And
I love that.
A lot of times I've shared before, I also put in, like the chili I made this morning, I actually put ground tempeh. I grind up or just break apart tempeh and saute that first with some herbs and spices so that it kind of takes the place of the chopped meat. You know, if somebody is soy sensitive, you can leave that out.
That sounded great.
I love putting spinach in whatever I have. I mean, I put spinach in that day because we were harvesting so much spinach.
Right.
Like, cooks down to nothing. It's great. It gives it extra iron, extra greens and antioxidants, and just a great
I'm going to try that next time I make my chili.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. So I just felt so connected to Annapurna when we were doing that last week. It just, you know, it just kind of came full circle to know that I'm having you on the show and to be out there connecting with the goddess Annapurna. It was just perfect.
It was perfect, a perfect goddess for you, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about some of the goddesses that you do have in your book that are really doing amazing things.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, we have Madur Jaffrey, who is the goddess Durga warrior.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me about how you connected with her and a little bit about her?
Well, I had, of course, been a fan of her writing. I have her cookbooks, and so I knew of her so well from that aspect. And I happened to, I'm friends with her daughter, actually, which is how I got introduced to her. And when I asked her about, well, one thing I'll just say first off is I never in my process never tell any woman, like, what goddess they should be or embody or portray.
Mm-hmm.
So really the process of making the images are very collaborative. I mean, you told me Annapurna, and how perfect was that? And some of the women have to do some searching and their own research to find which ancient myths connects with them. If you met her, it was she was very connected to Durga, and it was an easy choice for her. But others, it isn't, and involves like kind of internal searching and to decide what aspect of themselves they want to portray. So
it's interesting. Durga is another aspect of Parvati.
Yep.
Just like Annapurna. So it's all the same, you know, in Indian mythology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take a god or a goddess, and then at different stages of their life, they're given a different name.
Right.
And so Durga is part of Parvati when she was a warrior. So that was perfect.
Right.
And I'm wondering what connected her to the warrior part. Was it fighting that glass ceiling we were talking about?
Exactly. In the book, one of the wonderful things is that each woman then wrote why they picked the goddess. So I always find that, just as I said, their choice, your choice, the subject's choices were so revealing. And then when they even write about it, it's, you know, they're really sharing a deep part of themselves. And Madhur wrote, she was saying I'm quoting from the book, "I have never accepted any constraints put upon me as a woman. Perhaps that is why I am drawn to the goddess. She has many forms. She can be beautiful Uma, glowing with ethereal feminine light when it suits her. Joined to her husband Shiva in their half-man, half-woman form, she is fully capable of co-ruling the world."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, so we're going back to the glass ceiling and being a powerful woman, and when needed, you know, calling in that energy that you need to be ferocious and to not to accept any constraints.
It's perfect. Perfect. Yeah. And then this weekend, actually, you had a fundraiser for one of your goddesses for the work she's doing.
Yes.
Why don't you share that with us?
Yeah. Well, Anna Massari Keys is one of my neighbors that I met who is doing incredible work in Africa. She lives here part-time, I guess, but she's from Malawi, Africa. And she found that when she was going back and forth, she's been here for quite a while, but when she would go back to Malawi, she would attend a funeral. She went to her sister's funeral, and there were all these children swarming and coming to the funeral to have food because all their parents had died of AIDS. So there was no one nurturing the children. That's what she saw. And she started an incredible organization called Maloto, which has two components to it. Well, actually three. It's feed, empower, and educate. And she started a women's group, the Kwitu Women's Group, which bought land. They're now growing their own food, and from the food, they're feeding, I don't know, a staggering number of children. They've fed the amount of lunches they fed from the land that they're growing themselves. So, and this she started, this is one woman, Anna Keys, which has done amazing work there.
Now, what goddess did she pick?
She picked Anekpa, which is a African goddess of family and destiny. And she was talking about the closeness of family and the importance of community and how community is so important there as well as here. And as you said, the fundraiser, we as a community, our area in Rockland County, really came together and supported her and the school she started. We are now a sister school. Our local high school is a sister school with the school she started. That's the other component of Moloto. And doing incredible work. I mean, I'm so privileged to be her friend and all the women in here are just amazing women.
Yeah.
And,
well, yep. I know. I bought the book. It's just amazing and beautiful.
Thank you.
The photographs are gorgeous. I mean, anybody, how would people get their hands on your book? Can you just go into Barnes & Noble and buy it, or do you have to order it? Or?
It's available online through Amazon as well as my website, goddessonearth.com. And it's in some select stores. It's at the Reuben Museum in New York. And a couple of other select stores that you'll find, but mostly it's online.
Mm-hmm. You know, nowhere would be great would be also at the Brooklyn Museum, where they have the largest feminist art collection.
Yes.
That would be a great museum store for it.
Perfect.
Another thing with Anna, I remember when we got together, you were telling me about how she, along with another woman, taught them how to can.
Yes, okay, yeah, that's incredible. When I went to Malawi to photograph what she was doing there, I traveled with Meredith Brokaw, who saw that the women, there were so many tomatoes, and they weren't being used they weren't canning. And Meredith comes from a Midwestern background and said, don't you know how to can? You've got to be... you know, canning this for later on, when they're not, you know,
harvest time.
So they had no idea how to do it, and she sent over cans and the canning material and went and taught them. And now it's in, I think it's like over 20 stores in Malawi, and they're doing a phenomenal business, which they didn't. So now they're not only feeding all the kids, the Kwitu women, they're also now have a whole industry that they're developing and growing, and it's taken on a life of its own.
Right, so they're generating a livelihood that can support these kids as well.
Yep.
Well, that's an amazing goddess story.
And
wonderful.
One of the women who's a Kwitu woman, that's this group... this cooperative. I did another portrait of her as Abuk, who is a goddess of agriculture. And I love what Maureen wrote about, well, it's both things. I love the goddess that she picked, Abuk, which the mythology behind that is a goddess of agriculture. And her story is that with two grains of corn, she fed an entire village and gave everybody all they needed from the garden and from those two kernels of corn. Mm. I mean, it's such a great, you know.
And is that the story of Abuk?
That's the story of Abuk. And then Maureen, who works with the Kwitu women, said, I'm going to quote her from the book, as a member of the Kwitu women's group in Malawi, Africa, I help grow corn to feed orphans and vulnerable children. I am a woman of great faith and determination. I will not give up on anything until it is done the right way. Talking doesn't fill the basket in the farm. Success requires planning and hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, one thing that's just touching me is we're talking about these goddesses, and I'm thinking of Africa. I'm also remembering my trip to India. And... you know, and I've also traveled to some other third world countries. And I have to say, the thing that always strikes me and actually angers me a little bit is that it's the women that are always doing the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
The women are carrying the baskets on their head. The women are schlepping the water. The women are out there working. And you see these guys hanging out at, you know, in India, the guys are hanging out at the chai shop, and the women are gathering the straw and the weeds that are going to feed the animals through the winter
mm-hmm.
to get them through,
mm-hmm.
to feed their children, to get through
mm-hmm.
and deal with the elements. And the men are not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to me that, you know, there's this glass ceiling, and yet, you know, around the world, these women are the movers and shakers that are making it happen.
Right.
Pretty fascinating. Anyway, on that note, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to hear some more of the stories of these amazing goddess women.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't go anywhere, everyone. We'll be right back. You're listening to Bhavani and Ari Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Lisa Lavarte, world-renowned winning photographer and author of this gorgeous book that I'm holding in my hands right now called Goddess on Earth. And we're talking about some of the divine feminine portraits that she took. Lisa, are you with me?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Great. So tell us about some of your other favorite goddesses, or not favorite, but ones that might have to do with feeding people or taking care of the planet, or, I mean, there's so many here.
Well, there's so many. It's interesting. They're the women and what they are, the individual women and what they are doing in the world, and when you say saving the planet, I mean doing incredible work individually, but there are also some of the goddesses that they chose that are, you know, nurturing goddesses. So
mm-hmm.
I actually see them differently. I mean, I see the divine in each woman. I guess I'm talking about that you're calling them a goddess, that I think we all are goddesses, and they're just
mm-hmm.
Tapping into archetypes. So,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
But somebody that jumps in mind when you talk about that, one of my favorites, is Susan Weed, who's an herbalist. She is absolutely a genius and knows every herb and plant and their medicinal properties, and has been teaching this for years and years. And the pharmaceutical aspects of different plants, and she's a remarkable woman. And she taught me, I mean, I really feel that I learned from each woman that I photographed, each goddess archetype
mm-hmm.
that they chose, I learned something from them, like they were my teachers. And Susan picked a very fierce, as did Madhur Jaffrey. It's interesting that we're talking about the two of them today, but Susan, we picked Baba Yaga, who's a Baltic goddess of fearsome wisdom. And Susan has a very fierce side of herself, and certainly portrayed that in her portrait, and portrayed that with me, so I was a little scared of her. And
mm-hmm.
But she's really is quite... in her own way, you know, that the wisdom is, that this is another side of womanhood. We are all not just nice and nice nurturers. We can be fearsome and determined, and we have all different sides of us, which is what I'm trying to show about women.
Yeah, I'm looking at her picture now, and it is intense. I could imagine why you might be
scared.
Uh-huh. And Baba Yaga is goddess of fearsome wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she's been the Baltic myth, as in many of these myths, have been demonized. She's sort of a craggy old witch. That's the image of it, who eats children. I think this is a story about her. But it's base. The deeper meaning is the wisdom that she had. You know, it's another story that was demonized by patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, another one that you have here is someone that's actually been a guest on my show, Majora Carter. Tell us about that experience.
Yes. Well, Majora, she's actually not in the book. She's I've continued to make portraits and then write monthly for the Huffington Post about the different women and what they are doing in the world and how their how the goddess relates to contemporary women. So Majora was one of the women that I think I photographed this year, and I've seen her talk at several occasions, and she's such an inspiring woman, and I was very honored to photograph her with what she does in urban revitalization and how she's encouraging green infrastructure policies in the Bronx. I mean, she's just a powerhouse. And she picked Green Tara, Tibetan goddess, and she wrote something interesting about it. She wrote, Green Tara embodies the pure wish to protect and support something or someone that has been through so much. And I kind of think she was talking about her, the Bronx, you know, and how, and the community that she comes from.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote, she is love, wisdom, and fierceness all rolled into one, qualities I want to live up to.
Right. Yeah, I've heard her speak as well. And, you know, when you grow up in the South Bronx, I mean, it's, you know, it's a rough area, and yet when you get into it,
mm-hmm.
it's a community that
mm-hmm.
that is wonderful and delightful and has a lot of loving people there, and you need to, you know, support the goodness that's there so that that can outshine the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what some of these goddesses are really doing in their circles,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to embody the divine feminine that, you know, that can shine and nurture throughout all conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And about community, that, I mean, when you think about Majora, you know, working within her community to make it a better place,
mm-hmm.
and nurturing her own community, which she has done.
Right, right. What about Starhawk?
Starhawk was, Starhawk's amazing. She was one of my inspirations, even in just making the book, because she's been involved in goddess spirituality, earth-based spirituality, for, I don't know, 25 years, and one of the early women in America to be writing about it. And so I'm very honored that she wrote my afterword for the book, and was thrilled to do her portrait. And we did it in Glastonbury, England. We were both at a conference there at a goddess conference that she was doing workshops and speaking at. And she picked the goddess Maeve, who's a Celtic goddess of sovereignty and protection. And she wrote, I'll read what Starhawk wrote. Maeve is a fairy queen, a wild, somewhat mad and magical figure, a fighter and a lover. For me, she is an inspiration to fight for the wild things, and to dare to transgress the boundaries of what people consider sensible and sane. And Starhawk is a fierce activist and organizer. I mean, she's been doing this for many years. She's an environmental activist, and now very much doing a permaculture designer, and does a lot of workshops on that. So she's very early involved in that aspect of, you know, how we're treating the land.
Hmm. That's a wonderful one.
Mm-hmm.
Permaculture. I've had some permaculture experts on my show, and you know, it's a beautiful way of also replenishing and taking
right.
care of the earth.
Right. So it's connecting, knowing where the food is coming from, and treating Mother Earth with respect, that we have to feed her as well. If we want, you know, to be fed by her, we have to treat her well, too. I think that's part of the whole thing of our disconnect, going back to disconnect about our disconnect from nature and from our food, which is why we're, you know, global problems with the environment. You know, it's, I think that's why this movement, the goddess movement, is, you know, bubbling up to the surface. And I really feel it's the divine feminine is aspect is coming to the forefront and is only going to get stronger because I think.
Well, your work has taken you also to so many wonderful places and. And has, as you said, it's not just this book. This book might have just been the, you know, one of the means that opened these doors for you because since this book has come out, you have traveled so many places and met so many wonderful people. Do you want to share a few other?
Well, I just came back from Morocco and had some wonderful experiences there with meeting women and connecting with their mythology. I mean, that's what I'm trying to travel and see where the ancient myths that can be connected to that we've lost. When I first started this 12 years ago, I was in a women's group. And each woman was, and this is, I didn't know why I was there, what I was doing, but it was a goddess group, and each woman started saying names of goddesses, and I had never heard of any of them. Of course, everybody knows Aphrodite, but beside that, it was like these were names that I hadn't heard of, and I thought, how is it I don't know these names? How are these sacred myths so that were so vital and so important at one time in our history? You know, 2,000, 3,000 years ago, they were such important names, but now we don't know them? How is it that I don't know their names? And this is true in so many of the cultures that, and I think it goes back to women's power, that those archetypes were suppressed. And right. So I am
trying. Also, one of the problems of our country is we're such a melting pot. You know, I talk about this a lot with our food cultures. I mean, as American, our country is such a young country. We don't have the ancient history that, you know, people in other parts of the world do. So if you grew up in Morocco, you know, those ancient stories are ones that you have, I would hope, are still somewhat alive because they've been ingrained in that culture, you know. And the same with, I know, in India. I mean, Annapurna is still very prevalent in India. It's
right.
Like I said, her pictures in most Indian kitchens you go into. And, you know, and I would think that would be true in many of the countries that you're traveling to. But here, we're such a melting pot.
Yeah, and we sort of shed some of those. We shed those when we, I think the melting pot aspect is that some of those second generation, you kind of shed those cultural aspects, so it's important to keep them alive, I think. And I'd love to try one of my I'd love to be going to like Alaska to the you know, do some portraits up there, the Native American Indians and Hawaiian cultures, and I think what's important though for my work is to show that it's the faces of these ancient myths are in contemporary women, that we're not describing the images, but they're not like women in togas or saris, you know, not looking like necessarily
the goddess. They're not dressing up. They're just embodying.
Not dressing up. It's more, it's an internal manifestation, and it's showing that they're here in everyday life, in our contemporary world. So, when I didn't really paint that picture, but each of the goddesses we talked about and each of the portraits are very real. And that
one of my favorites in this book, I'm just looking at it right now, is the Venus of Willendorf.
Oh, my favorite too. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so beautiful, and one of the reasons I find it so beautiful is because in our society we're you know, we're taught the beauty of women are really skinny, and you know we're used to seeing models, and this is a large, beautiful, voluptuous woman who is you know, a god, an earth mother.
Right.
And she just looks like an earth mother with a child there. I mean, she's round and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And just a beautiful, beautiful photo, and the energy between her and
her daughter.
I assume that's her daughter. Is
yeah.
just gorgeous.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, just the love and the just the comfort in her body and the comfort in the daughter in loving her mother's round, voluptuous body. It is. It's just so earthbound. And yet, if you look at the picture with her arm reaching up to the, you know, to the heavens, that there's something light. It's both earthy and light.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's and it's so perfect that she's a doula and midwife.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time she was a midwifery student, but I assume by now she's a midwife.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's just really beautiful.
Yeah.
So where else have you traveled to photographing goddesses?
Well, as I mentioned, to Africa, and I've been going back and forth to the West Coast quite a bit. I actually haven't been in the middle. I have to do that. But England and Hawaii and hope to do more and more. It's an ongoing passion that has endless variety because women are endlessly
right,
diverse.
Right.
So,
what kind of I know you did two events this weekend. You had that fundraiser for
mm-hmm.
Anna and her yeah. work in Malawi,
mm-hmm.
and then you had another event.
Yeah. There was in New Jersey for an organization called Project Ladybug, and
another feminist event.
Yeah. And
uh-huh.
It was called Goddess Night Out, and it was a fundraiser for to raise money for children with cancer.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Do you have any other events coming up?
Yeah, I have. Well, I'm very excited. In March, I'll be doing a month-long event at the Luna Stage Theater in East Orange, New Jersey, where I'm going to be taking over pretty much a black box theater and installing. I make these 10-foot banners, photo banners, which are the portraits, the women, so they're larger than life, and fill the space with the photographs as well as videos, and kind of make an experiential space where you come and be immersed in sound and images of the women embodying the goddess, music, and as well as the words like that I've been reading, but they're projected in a fashion, and so I think it's going to be great. It will be running daily, probably for the month of March, which is Women's History Month.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, we'll have visualizing three projectors running, and each projector will have a different stage of women's lives, and you'll be surrounded by these large images of these fabulous women. But it will be very internal, so an experience. So you'll just kind of let it wash over you.
And so if people want to find out more information about that, it will be on your website, Goddess on Earth?
Yep, www.goddessonearth.com. And, I'll have more information about that. And other events keep coming up, but that's the one I'm focusing on right now.
Right. Well, that sounds like a great one.
Yeah.
I'll bring my daughter, who, as you know, is a curator for the Feminist Art Collection at the Brooklyn Museum.
Yes.
And,
well, like the dinner party, you know, that's incredible. You know, that's at the dinner, isn't that right? The dinner party?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a celebration of all those goddesses that you are talking about.
Yes, and each goddess is a plate, you know, she's created these ceramic plates, and it's a wonderful piece.
Yeah, by Judy Chicago,
very early.
Yeah, it is a wonderful piece. If people have not seen that, anyone listening, you should go over to the Brooklyn Museum. It's a permanent installation there, and it's really powerful.
And
that's really powerful.
That work is, those are my inspirations, you know, that's where my work is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
The work of Judy Chicago and others like her
mm-hmm.
From the 60s, I guess. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, it's been such a pleasure to have you on and to share this divine feminine experience with you.
Thank you.
I thank you.
Thank you.
And everyone who's been listening, I've been talking with Lisa Levart, and if you can make it to that installation, you should, because I know it's going to be awesome, and I certainly will be there. Anyone, have a great rest of the week, and I'll be with you again next week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Greens on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a great rest of the week.